Hey, Ben.
Hey, Adam.
Well, thanks to all of our listeners, we have sort of been courted by some networks to join.
And we are super excited to announce here before the episode today that we are joining MaximumFun.org. Pretty much the dream network for both of us, I think.
Yeah, like when we talked off mic about the idea of joining a network, it was really only about joining this one. Like, I know that gives away all of our leverage business-wise. But
fortunately, the ink is dry, so...
Yeah.
But if you don't know about MaximumFun.org, it's a network of comedy and culture podcasts that includes things like Judge John Hodgman, My Brother and Me, NPR's Bullseye, Jordan Jesse Go, Throwing Shade, Lady to Lady, Can I Pet Your Dog? There's so many great shows on this network. So if you are a fan of our show, I think the chances are pretty good that you would love everything else on this network.
Their network is so good. Like, I actually don't understand why they would want us on it. Like, one of these things is not like the other, and it's us.
I do kind of feel like the other shows might be a little bit embarrassed to be sharing the airwaves with us.
They are so great. Like, these are my favorite podcasts that I listen to that are on this network. So I am super pumped to be a part of it.
I am too. And nothing is really going to change with our show other than you're going to hear promos for other shows on the network peppered into the episodes, which are always really fun to listen to. They're fun and funny. And then you'll hear the Maximum Fun stinger at the end of the show. And that's it.
There are a lot of really cool podcasts and podcast networks out there, but I think very few of them do what Maximum Fun does. They are sincerely making great show, and I'm happy to be part of it.
You know, we haven't done a lot of advertising on our show, but we've done a dab. And while I think that it was a successful experiment for us and didn't detract from the quality of the show at all, one great thing about being on a listener-supported network like Maximum Fun is that, you know, we don't have any pressure to really lean into advertising. You know, we might still do an ad from time to time, but that's not like the business model here. It's more just about making something that's great and giving it away for free, and the people that really like it can help out monetarily if they want.
Totally. Like, if I were listening to a podcast and they opened with the news that they were joining a network, I'd be like, ah, fuck. Like, it's gonna be full of ads, and my favorite show is gonna get ruined, and I'm never gonna listen again. That is not happening here. Like, that's like the main takeaway. It's gonna be the same terrible podcast you've come to know and love.
But two hosts that are even more excited to be doing it than they were already.
Yeah, absolutely. Our biggest thanks to MaximumFun.org for having us on board, and we look forward to a long, great relationship with them producing this terrible podcast.
Yeah, and we are sorry to all of the other podcast hosts on the network for what this does to your image.
It's like we sat down at the cool table in the lunchroom and everyone else is getting up to leave. This is the podcast equivalent of that.
Yeah. Ugh, sorry, guys.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I am Ben Harrison.
Ben, the episode we're about to watch today kind of creeped me out. How do you feel about it?
I'm on a similar level. It's hard to feel too creeped out right now because I am barbecuing and drinking a beer.
Oh, shut up, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping me from doing that.
No, nothing.
You know what? I'm gonna go off mic and run to grab a beer, and then I'm gonna be right back. You're gonna hold down the show for me.
So I gotta vamp while you're
you run upstairs. I think this should only be like 15 seconds.
Okay. You know, while Adam is away, I should tell you that I have half a mind to open this box of Star Trek cards that he bought for me on air today. I don't know if he's going to have his handy when I spring that on him, so he might be forced to pop up and run and get those as well later in the show.
And I'm back.
Oh, okay. Hey.
And I've got a beer.
Oh, that sound effect proves it.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, that's nothing more refreshing than a nice cold beer and a Star Trek podcast.
Hey, guys, what have you been talking about?
Oh, nothing.
Okay. That'll be a fun surprise when I go to edit the episode.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So the Enterprise is once again on a courier mission.
Yeah.
So this is like a key kind of mission that the Enterprise is stuck with, is like, we need some stuff to get from one place to another place. And the flagship of a fleet of thousands of ships is going to get stuck with this duty.
They're kind of like the Uber XL, right?
Yeah.
Like the best Uber you can get, mm-hmm. is what you call for a transportation mission like this one.
Yeah. Congestion pricing? Don't mind if I do.
3X scarves is the surge price for the flagship of the Federation.
Oh, geez. That's a lot of... That is a closet rating.
I know.
In a way that only Tasha Yar could really match. So what's going on here is that there's some aliens on a planet called Solaeus 5 that have been at war for centuries, and they are finally ready to, drop them swords and pick up them plowshares.
And, yeah, like the idea is the war has gone on so long that they've killed just about everyone.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to understand that, like, they could kill each other into an extinction here pretty soon unless peace is invoked.
So there is a legendary negotiator name of Reva that they've petitioned the Federation to bring to them. They don't want any Federation meddling in these peace negotiations, which I feel like is like, why would anybody think that the Federation gives a fuck about your stupid planetary conflict? But
I would so much rather have a Federation mediator than Ginger Jesus.
Worf is a little nervous about this guy because
we've negotiated several treaties between the Klingons and the Federation,
which seems like a strange position for Worf to have, given that he's a Klingon that lives and works in the Federation. But he does some pretty funny grumbling about how
before him there was no Klingon word for peacemaker.
I bet Reva introduced a lot of words into his language that they didn't have before, like a wedge salad,
beige,
khaki pants.
What is the name for the mustache hair that is like the center part of the lip that Klingons never grow?
The Hitler stash part?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Reva has lots of that, and I've never seen a Klingon with any.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, so they beam down to Reva's planet to meet him, and it is like beaming onto a mega church. It's totally got mega church vibes. It's got big columns and stained glass and what have you. And what really ices the whole cake here is that Reva himself is wearing silken robes. He's got that look about him that there was a buddy of mine when I was growing up, and his parents had like the oil painting of Jesus in his basement, like with the eyes that seem to follow you around the room.
Right.
Like, Reva looks like an oil painting, and I was really creeped out by him, to be honest. Ginger Jesus knows your secrets.
I just feel like...
He looks into your soul.
I just feel like you have to be real suspicious of a guy who, when you first enter his house, he comes out and silently, like, nods at the three people there. And then we should say it's Picard, Troy, and Worf.
Yeah.
And then goes and stands on a podium... So yeah. That he's elevated above them, which is like I would be like, all right, fuck you. Like, you can't negotiate shit. You are so fucking full of yourself.
Yeah, if you're all about the cult of Reva at that point, like, how is anyone going to respect you enough to mutually work on a peace between each other? Like, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Maybe the way that he makes peace happen between warring cultures is their mutual hatred of Reva himself. Like, they'd be at a diplomatic meeting, like, God, this Reva guy's a huge dick, huh? And the guy's like, yeah, I know. Oh, man, we're more alike than we thought.
He finds that one small scrap of common ground that they have and builds on it.
Yeah, this guy really is a genius.
So Reva is wordless when he first comes in, and then three weirdos in white robes join him, and we've got another like oil painting looking person, which is a redheaded lady, and then we've got a guy who is like, if it's possible, even more sexually magnetic than Riker, with like a kind of like a Jerry curl. And then a guy in like, and like,
he's a sexual super magnet.
Yeah. And yeah. Super conducting sex.
The kind that kids aren't allowed to play with, because if they swallow them, they'll just tear up their insides.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the FDA was right to recall this guy. And then a guy in like a beret with a kind of a chip on his shoulder. And, these are Reva's chorus. They represent, by turns, the unifying spirit, the sexual warrior aspect of his personality, and the artist-poet aspect of his personality, which I got pretty jealous thinking about what it would be like if my personality had a sexual warrior aspect to it. I feel like I got to go back to the personality shop for an upgrade.
It made me wonder, like, if you have... If the only way you can function in the world is to have a chorus, you know, profess all of these things on your behalf.
Yeah.
I mean, is sexual warrior guy like taking out your dick and and putting it in people?
Yeah.
Like, how much help does sexual warrior guy provide?
I don't know. I mean, he's definitely shaking you off when you use the urinal. So it is explained by Reva via his chorus that he is deaf and he has this telepathic link with his chorus where they hear his thoughts and interpret them into sounds, and then, you know, he receives the responses, I guess mostly by lip reading, but also through them. And this is like a normal situation for members of the ruling line of his planet, which appears to be humans, but I guess not. Like, they're somewhat telepathic.
We don't get a clear explanation, really.
Yeah, he's on to Troy being telepathic early and putting the moves on her often, I would say.
Yeah, you can tell because his interactions with Troy are primarily using the dick valet.
Yeah, yeah, everybody else clams up.
At times like this, we become an encumbrance.
And Jerry Curl Dick Valet starts speaking.
Being with you here now is provoking an emotional revelation.
Troy's like, how come this guy's the only one that talks to me? At one point.
How come this rando has an erection? And, I mean, we're joking around here, but Troy seems down.
I'd like that.
No, yeah, she's the more she sees of Reva, the more down she is.
It wouldn't be the first time that she's fooled around with several people in the room. I mean, if you're in a relationship with Riker for any period of time, I think
he's going to take you on some adventures. He's going to help you build some memories, like a like the low mileage pit woofy you are.
He's going to spin that odometer.
So they beam up, they head onto the bridge. Picard introduces Reva around.
Yeah, all seven of them get on the bridge. This is something that I put down in my notes that was really interesting to me, was, do you remember how small the turbo lift felt when it was just Wesley?
The boy.
And Picard.
Yeah.
A couple episodes ago. How do you cram seven people on there? I think that's why we don't get an interior shot.
Much like a Mini Cooper, The turbo lift can house more clowns than you think. Reva is very interested to meet Geordi in a way that I almost felt like he was going to divert his sexual attention away from Troy and pour it into Geordi.
Yeah.
Because Geordi, Geordi's visor, Reva likens to his chorus and is really pleased that Geordi is, you know, not ashamed of his disability or in any way, you know, doesn't feel in any way limited by it.
Yeah, this is one of the many times in the episode we are told that everyone is special in their own way.
You are special.
It's a pretty clear theme throughout that I'm okay and you're okay.
Yeah. Are you saying that Reva might as well have just been passing out participation trophies?
Yeah, and that's what he's doing in touching everyone's chest as he meets them.
Yeah.
That's another form of introduction for him.
He didn't do that to Troy, though. I guess he's saving that for later.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because at the end of this scene, he basically asks Picard's permission for Troy to escort him around the rest of the ship, and Picard definitely, like, you know, it's like... sexual predator to sexual predator, Picard kind of gives him a wink and is like, all
right. Why don't you have a seat right over there, please?
I see what you're trying to do, and I like it.
I fully respect this.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you got to find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
All right, so they get to this planet that has Solaeus 5, the war planet, and they pick like a piece of high ground that they're going to beam down to. The aliens, the indigenous aliens that are at war with each other, are immediately pissed off because Picard deigns to radio them up rather than having Reva make the first contact. Like they're like, we don't want to talk to anybody that isn't Reva. And
that impression was spot on, by the way.
Yeah, these might be the dumbest aliens that the series has to offer. They're like nothing but ersatz Klingons. The way the actors were told to play them is like as sniveling as Ferengi and as stupid as the stupidest Klingon. Like they're just so unimaginative as a species.
And they totally look like a rubber mask malfunction. It looks like they didn't want to throw out the first version of the Ferengi face piece.
Right.
Like, and so they decided to just recycle some of their melted plastic parts.
Yeah, they set down like a Klingon mask next to the kiln and it melted. And they're like, oh, shit! Oh!
Yeah. Yeah, let's not just throw it away. Certainly, there's something we can do with these.
Good enough for government money.
Yeah, they look real gross.
So Reva beams down with, I think it's a, what is it? It's just Riker and Worf and Reva and his chorus.
Yes.
And that's a big group. They beam down to the top of this mountain and they're going to set up like the conference table where these aliens are going to sit down to negotiate this peace.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of party planning in this scene, right? Like, they're walking around with Reva, and he's like, let's stick the table there.
Some tiki torches over here.
And yeah, we got to have some tiki torches on either side of this table.
Yeah.
Like, we get a fair amount of storytelling about where we're going to set up this scene.
You know, they haven't quite gotten to what the cabana is going to look like because the aliens show up. And, you know, they come from opposite sides onto the peak of this mountain.
They got laser guns.
Yeah, they've got some pretty rad ray guns, I have to say. Like, if I was a collector of memorabilia, I would be pretty happy to own either of the ray guns from this scene.
Yeah. If you happen to have a set or pack of Star Trek cards, I think you'd be pretty tickled that one of the cards could be one of these ray guns. An autographed ray gun card,
oh, yeah,
for example.
I think signed by the ray gun itself.
Yeah.
I hear that the ray gun is going to be making appearances at Emerald City Comic Con next year.
Oh, geez. I think the ray gun appearance could only happen at Greatest Gen Con in Fresno, California.
You keep saying that, and it might actually happen, Adam, and that terrifies me.
If we could only get enough C-list actors from the show, I think that'd be great. Like, our panel would be hilarious.
Do you think it's sort of like film financing where you, like, you get the actors committed by saying that you have the financing in place and you get the financing by saying you have the actors committed?
Sure. It's a total scheme.
Yeah.
A pyramid scheme. It's the same, of C-list actors.
It's the same way you get, like, two characters in a sitcom back together. Like, you send them each a note saying, meet me here at this time.
Yeah, you sort of Reva your actors, don't you? Mm.
We should probably cut this out so that Denise Crosby and them don't hear it and get wise to our scheme.
Let me tell you something. There is no fucking way Denise Crosby will ever A, respond to us for such a request, or B, actually go to Greatest Gen Con. It's not going to happen. She's too big anyway.
Yeah,
like she's too big of a star. We're talking about the Argyles of the world here, okay?
We're talking about that helmsman that bought it in the Where Silence Says Lease episode.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, could you imagine just a 2-hour panel with that guy?
Oh, man.
Talking about that scene?
I would love that so much.
I have so many questions.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease. Tell me more.
So these aliens show up, and one of them has, like, a lackey, and the lackey's, like, there's, like, two kind of, like, alpha aliens and then two beta aliens, and the, mm-hmm. like, so the alphas each have a lackey who is, like, a little bit more stooped over in Planet of the Apes-y, and one of them is like, no, fuck peace, fuck everything! Starts, like, blasting away with his ray gun, and wouldn't you know it, he manages to score a single shot that takes the entire trio of chorus members out in one go. So
yeah, and his ray gun is set to gore, because the way these people die is terrifically awful.
Yeah.
Like,
we haven't seen this much gore since Conspiracy and or Nazis looking at the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, it's like all three bodies have been put into a giant microwave and then melted in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It was great. Good effect.
Good effect. The only downside of this effect is that they had them kind of, throw their hands up in despair and then froze them in one specific position so they could match up the, like, digital skeletons that they comp in.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a silly pose that they meet their end in.
You don't want to go out like that.
Nah, dog.
Especially when you're the dick valet.
No. So, Worf and Riker, like, leap into action, get Reva beamed back up onto the ship, and,
Yeah, they do that thing where, like, when a diplomat, where an attempted assassination has happened, where they, like, they actually surround him.
Yeah, they
hug him close, and then they beam him up.
Throw themselves in front of the bullets.
Yeah.
And they beam him up just after the alpha alien whose lackey he has just killed says, he doesn't represent what we wanted to do here. He's a traitor. Come back.
That sounded a little bit Cosby to me.
Yeah.
You got to come back down here, Rudy.
There's no proof that I did anything to anyone. I'm America's father, Theo.
My Picasso is getting worse and worse as time goes on.
I disagree entirely.
So they get back on the ship. Reva is pretty verklempt.
Oh, he's pissed. And you can tell he is because his hand gestures are spasmatic.
And
he is basically screaming with his hands.
Yeah. He's made himself as incomprehensible as he can possibly make himself. And I think that, before they beam down, there's a scene where he and Troy have a nice romantic dinner together, and Cock Valet is asked to leave at a certain point. So they just kind of have established, like, the most basic sign language communication between each other.
Yeah, it's basically Reva making an okay sign with one hand and then, like, repeatedly pointing the finger from his other hand through the O.
Yes. And then flipping it around and poking it through the backside to show that he'd be down for some butt stuff, too.
And Troy's doing that thing where she like flicks her cheek, like, and makes it makes the bubble sound, which I can't do.
Like,
but
like Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep. Yep. It's they just descend into like a seventh grade lunchroom situation.
Well, unlike Cameron, who is nearly catatonic at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Riva is rip shit pissed and doesn't care who knows about it. And they're like, they're kind of at an impasse because Riva can't conduct this peace negotiation because he can't communicate with anybody.
You can't fuck without a cock valet.
Right. Yeah. Picard puts Data on learning some sign language so that he can, you know, potentially interpret for Riva. So there's a great scene where Data like gets on the computer and kind of he's looking at like the dirty hand signal Kama Sutra for like, you know, he like puts it on accelerated speed the way he likes to. And he learns all the tricks. And then they have some scenes with Riva where Data is interpreting for him. And I think these are like pretty great scenes because Riva's making the argument that Data cannot convey the kind of emotional nuance of language by interpreting for him, and Data is kind of like forced to convey this message as you know, and Data is such a great character for this because he takes everything at face value and doesn't like take anything personally, but at the same time he's like sort of being forced to communicate his own limitations on behalf of somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be like if Dr. Pulaski wrote up a manifesto and Data had to read it out loud.
Yeah, that'd be really embarrassing.
Yeah. Not as embarrassing as having a Star Trek podcast, Adam.
My name is Mr. Data. I am an idiot. I don't know anything about humanity. I am terrible at being on the holodeck.
My asshole friend Geordi almost got the ship blown up by Moriarty.
Dr. Pulaski is a great doctor.
And very easy on the eyes given her advanced age.
Dr. Pulaski could be sexually active if she wants to be. She just doesn't want to be.
It's not that she doesn't want to be a sexual icon. It's that she chooses not to be.
Yarmouk Angelad at Tanagra. Yarmouk Angelad at Tanagra.
So, in a very short amount of time, Data knows sign language.
Yeah.
So they meet up with Riva in the conference room to prove this.
Riva's he's like going through all the stages of grieving in kind of an accelerated rate, but he is, you know, he's not at acceptance mode yet.
Because Data shows off all his fancy signs, and Riva's like, no, fuck that. Like, I just watched my entire chorus get killed. I'm not really interested in doing this diplomacy anymore. I'd actually like to go home. Like, can you just take me home?
Yeah, I want my mama.
Yeah, he's real sad.
He's super sad. And then Troy kind of whoops his ass. She's like, hey, listen, like, you know, she goes into his quarters and says like, I'm gonna make a pass at trying to get these aliens to stop lasering each other to death, and I just want some like some pro tips. Like, give me like the top five hot tips of a intergalactic negotiator. And Riva is like, you know, there's not like a trick. It's fucking hard work, and it's hard work because you have to get people communicating. You have to get them to find a small piece of common ground and start communicating with each other about that, really listening to each other.
Do you think Riva's so pissed because, like, it's stated earlier on in the episode, he has never not made peace between two warring factions. Like, he has a perfect record for being a diplomat, and he lost his first one. Troy is like, it happens to everyone, man.
Right. You gotta get back in the game.
Do you think that's the main issue, is that, like, his pride is hurt? Or is it actually that he's grieving his dead chorus? I don't know. I sort of felt like there were two different things at play here.
Well, it's a bit of both. I mean, like, he's not doing the show must go on type of math here. He's like...
He's not hearing George Zips. encouragement in his mind.
Excuse me, Doc. I've got a plane to land.
Before going back out and winning the big game.
No, yeah. he's feeling real sorry for himself. He doesn't, you know, he's in a totally
new... That
was
another 2%er right there.
Yeah, yeah. I think every episode of this show, we make one joke that only three listeners will understand.
You've won a contest if you get that reference.
He sort of tries to kick her out by saying, like, listen, like, this is a game of turning weaknesses into strengths, and it's not for the faint of heart. And she goes, hey, why don't you've got a weakness right now. Why can't you turn that into a strength?
She's like, I've been turning soft into hard forever. You forget who you're talking to.
I know from weakness. I know from strength. And he starts, like, you know, nodding. He's like, oh, shit. That's kind of interesting.
He's starting to hear the Notre Dame fight song in his head. Like, yeah, all right, I can do this.
Oh, word? And that inspires him to go back down. And so he beams down to the planet, and they replicate the triangle table and the tiki torches that they were trying to get ready for this other party. And
this is a new location for this summit, though. I don't know if you noticed this, but when they first transported down... They've returned to Anybody Canyon.
Anybody!
The canyon where Riker walks off to the ledge and screams, anybody?
I definitely felt like it was a similar set. You're thinking it's the exact same set.
I'm thinking it's exactly the same. It's a different color psych and like just a different sort of color scheme to the whole thing.
They've graded the rocks a little differently.
But it's Anybody Canyon. Yeah.
Yeah, we should say that this is like we've fallen back off the wagon when it comes to exterior sets. It's just another fucking dusty gray styrofoam planet.
They once again just sort of set up the scene with a table and a tiki torch, and they sort of this time they radio up to Geordi to like get stuff sent down, sort of like Geordi's working at a Pier 1, like can you just send down some wicker baskets and a triangular table and a couple of tiki torches? And sure enough, the table set. And that's sort of like the end of the episode, right? The table set. Reva's like, I'll take it from here, guys. And Troy and Worf and Riker beam back up.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
We've skipped over one scene because it really like has nothing to do with the plot. But that is, in fact, the end of the episode. This one scene we've skipped over is Geordi takes a visit to sickbay and talks to Pulaski about his visor and having it replaced with ocular implants. She's saying, like, you know, we can put in ocular implants that look like eyes, but they're in fact mechanical. You'll lose about 20% of what the visor is giving you as far as visual information. The other thing we could do is regenerate your optic nerves and replicate you some brand new eyes, and we'll just pop those right in. And he's like, that's not possible. I've like, as far as I know. And she goes, I've done it twice. I know what I'm talking about. And Geordi is kind of confronted with this crazy choice of, like, you know, going to a natural set of eyes and losing this amazing advantage that the visor gives him. If I'm remembering correctly, I feel like he decides, he doesn't really reveal what his decision is going to be. Like, the scene sort of leaves it as this is something that Geordi's going to have to meditate on.
I think this is the first time that we're introduced to that tension with him, because up until now, I never got the idea that Geordi wanted to be free from the visor or wanted to have human eyesight or whatever. Like, his interaction with Armus was shitty because his glasses were knocked off of his head and he was temporarily blinded. Like, there are drawbacks to his way of living, but
sure.
In the same way that Data always expresses that he wants to be more human, you don't really, I haven't up to this point really gotten that read off of Geordi that he's like, God, this visor sucks. Like,
no,
I would love to be out of this thing. But this is the first time he's actually given that choice.
Yeah, so it was an interesting scene, but doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't really have any bearing on the episode and doesn't wind up being its own plot. It's just kind of like dropped in at the end of toward the end of the episode. Like, I feel like they just needed some time to pass, and they were like, "Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, we're talking about disability here. Like, let's drop this in."
It's also the first time that I think we are to understand that Pulaski is anything more than just a total asshole. Like, like she demonstrates some competency,
compassion.
Done a special thing medically. Yeah, she shows some compassion for someone else, anyone else. Like, this is sort of a turn for her too.
Yeah. That's a great point, Adam.
As you were watching the episode, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did, Adam. Drunk Shimoda is our award for a character doing something funny or ridiculous, much like Jim Shimoda, our favorite character from episode 2 of the series. I'm giving Picard the Drunk Shimoda award for this episode. Right at the beginning of the episode, Picard gets on the turbo lift with Commander Riker, and he's heading for the transporter room to go pick up Reva, and Riker's like, I'm not in love with the fact that you're going on this away mission. And Picard says,
cluck cluck cluck, number one, sir, you're being a mother hen.
I just thought that was such a funny way of putting the role that Riker plays with keeping Picard off of away missions, that I just couldn't help but award Picard the Drunk Shimoda for that.
He's clearly more of a rooster, that Riker.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like, I couldn't stop thinking about the whole idea of a chorus for this guy Reva. And like, could you imagine interviewing for that job? Like, like, look, we have 3 positions open. Why don't you just tell me a little bit about yourself, and we will tell you, like, which element of the chorus you'd be best at. So I imagine they hire the philosopher first, because that's probably a pretty easy demonstration of, like, you know, learned intelligence and
look
philosophy.
Great in a beret.
Sure. Yeah, like, that one seems most easy to be discerned, like from probably even a paper application. Like,
yeah, you could use a multiple choice test to find that person.
Or like a resume. Like, yeah, this guy's great. He's gonna be our smart guy. And the woman, she plays sort of the emotional tension, like the idea of maybe she's the form that all 3 of them take in one. Like, she's sort of the glue that holds the emotional and the intellectual together. And that leaves the cock valet. Like, what are you told if you're interviewing for that job?
I feel like that guy is cast on looks alone.
Like, if you're him, you're like, so tell me a little bit more about this job I'm applying for. All it said was chorus. And yeah. I imagine it, Reva or someone, you know, doing the interview in Reva's stead is like, well, the position we're applying for involves touching a lot of penis. And at all times, you must just seduce whoever Reva finds attractive. Like, and he got that job.
Yeah.
To me.
And kept that job.
Yeah, yeah. He's had it for a long time, clearly. Clearly, he is very close to Reva. And for me, dick valet and become drunk Shimoda, because he's his dick valet. Like, yeah. The very idea of that is ridiculous to me. That's my drunk Shimoda.
Good one. I feel like I retract mine in support of yours.
Dick valet job interview.
I am Locutus of Borg. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus of Borg. You are Borg.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is episode 6 of season 2, The Schizoid Man. A brilliant but terminally ill scientist seeks eternal life by transferring his mind into Data's body. Do you remember this one, Adam?
Not at all. No.
I feel like this is another plot vehicle where Data is not who he seems to be. And I feel like we had that in the last season, so I'll be curious to see how they make this at all a different episode.
They don't seem to learn anything whenever Data poses a threat to the crew. Like, they don't change how they treat Data at all.
No.
They sort of, I feel like they should give him a shock collar of some kind. Like, like the, if he ever gets out of line, like, it just cuts his head off or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
Well, maybe we'll learn a little bit more about that on the next episode.
Let's hope that we do.
If you ever want to talk about this episode or any other, you can reach out to us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. You can also find me and Ben there. I'm at Cut for Time, and he's at Benjamin R, A-H-R.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music. And we should also say go to www.gach.biz for today's episode and all other episodes. You can also email us at drunkshimoda@gmail.com.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of fun emails lately, so thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks for emailing us.
I think that just about wraps it up, Ben. That was that episode was kind of creepy as hell to me.
Yeah, it was a creepy episode, Adam. Hopefully the next one is less so, but I don't have a ton of hope for that.
There's a baseline level of creepiness that I feel like we're getting throughout season two so far. It's nice.
Yeah. Much creepier show than season one.
Yeah.
Well, with that, we'll be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and another episode of The Greatest Generation also.
Yeah, see you then.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.